Shoot the Defence, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
I keep saying Rory's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you've played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, and send in a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello, welcome to a special edition of Shoot Defence. I'm your host, Stell. And you could probably tell by my voice that I've got a big grin on my face. And the reason why I have this grin is because my guest is a gentleman who I pretty like watching, to be fair. Great central defender. He won domestic titles. He had international caps. He played the highest level for, well over a decade. Then he knows a thing or two about marketing, private equity and hedge funds. It's Ramon Vega. Ramon, welcome to the show, mate. How you doing?
Very good. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good. All good. What are you doing with yourself now, especially now that COVID-19 has affected everyone?
Well, I think it's affected definitely everyone. I think it's pretty much sitting in. Have you locked down and make sure you're safe. I think that's the most important part at this point, you know, just following the instructions, you know. We just hope everything goes back to normality. But, you know, I think it's a wish because it takes a little bit longer than what we thought, to be honest with you.
Yeah, unfortunately. So tell me something. If something like this happened while you were playing, do you think players would be a bit more sensible than a lot of them are these days? Because we've seen the likes of Jack Grealish and Carl Walker do a few naughty things. Would you guys be more disciplined back then?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if we were more disciplined or not in those days. I think, to be honest with you, I'll reverse the question. I think we got away with a lot of things in those days. There were still almost players who'd be naughty, but they got away because I think in those days not much like social media and all that things was not existing, to be honest with you, you know. So I think the poor players today were pretty much more an eye on them. Every movement, everything they're doing wrong is pretty much in the media, and I think that's one of the kind of way for them, you know, to defend in a way. But at the same time, of course, they have their responsibility, and they should know they are role models as well to the world of football and the rest. You know, everybody looks up to them, and therefore they should also to be accordingly handling all these situations. So yes, they're not right what they're doing, but at the same time, of defence as well, obviously. You know, these guys are also being looked into every single movement they're doing, you know.
That's a very diplomatic answer. I like it.
I was a player, so I need to defend sometimes players, but sometimes you can criticize as well.
It looks like the PFA aren't doing that, so someone might as well do it, right?
Yeah, well, the PFA, that's another conversation, to be honest with you. That's another institution to be, I think definitely be. Some changes has to be done in lots of way. I think the philosophy of the PFA has to be changed as well again. But again, I think that's a longer conversation to discuss, to be honest, about the PFA. But, you know, they're supposed to be there defending the players. That's the main call, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, I'm not going to ask you which footballers would have misbehaved, the ones that you played with, had COVID-19 existed back then, because that's, I'm recording this, so I don't think you want to throw anyone under the bus, so we could talk about this another time. But in terms of...
I think, to be honest, these are different times as well. But to be honest with you, I think nobody in the past ever had kind of such a time, so we'll be having today. Extreme restrictions for, obviously restrictions for the benefit of everybody's health, you know. And I think this is the main kind of problem, obviously, for these players who went out, where it's such an extreme moment, they should behave even more, be more careful, you know. If it wasn't such a restriction in place, I don't really care what they're doing in their private say they can do whatever they want, you know, they can party whatever they want, whoever they want, to be honest with you. But I think when it's coming down to humanity and safety of humanity, I think it's irresponsible if you do that, you know.
Absolutely. Okay, let's talk about your career at Grasshopper Zurich. You won 5 Swiss titles, 4 Swiss Cups, played alongside some fantastic footballers, Alan Suter being one of them. I think Giovanni Elba went out there on loan as an 18-year-old, if I remember correctly. So what are your fondest memories of your time at the club?
Oh, Grasshoppers for me, upon the view, that's why I started my professional career, you know. I have only great memories of Grasshoppers, you know, not just obviously winning trophies for them, but that's pretty much what created my career. They helped through all my youth in terms of career as well, my education and everything I've done in Zurich as well at the time. So Grasshopper for me is always going to be in my heart, because that's where I started everything with 16 years old, you know, going to the club, you know, Sutherland as well, but also, you know, at the time was Grasshopper Zurich and still one of the most biggest clubs in Switzerland, and to be part of that as a young boy was extremely exciting. And then we had a great I would say 10 years I was nearly there. Won a lot of trophies for them, and I was thankful for them. So I think every single moment, to be honest with you, it was a good memory for Grasshoppers.
Fantastic. Now, I was speaking to a gentleman called Tommy Taylor yesterday, who played for West Ham in the 70s. He was telling me stories about when he was a youngster at Leyton Orient. He was cleaning boots, he was doing the laundry, or, you know, cleaning the stadium. When you were a youngster, as you said, 16 years old, you're at the club, what responsibilities did you have?
It's a good question. I think that kind of message, to be honest, was only introduced when I came to play to England for Tottenham Hotspurs.
Oh, okay.
Because in Switzerland, I think, we didn't have such a man, to be honest with you, you need to clean up the laundry and everything. Of course, if you were in the first team, you're the one who has to carry out all the bags, all the away games and whatever, home games as well, or not, start helping the kit man and everything else. That's part of it. But you didn't have the really a kind of responsibility, or kind of a, you know, when I came to Spurs, you know, they said, well, suddenly you've got a young boy here, the guy's going to clean your boots every training session, and I was not used to it. Said, no, well, I'm going to clean my own boots, because that's the way I was actually used myself in Switzerland. And that's, for me, was very strange that somebody else is cleaning my boots. No, that's my boots, nobody touches them, you know. So it took me quite a while to adjust on that kind of system. All the English guys were laughing at me, you know. No, you know, this is the way it goes, it's the hierarchy, you know. These are the youth and everything. Oh, I don't care, the hierarchy can be on the pitch, but not on cleaning the boots, you know, to be honest with you, you know. So, so for me, it was that. Didn't exist in Switzerland too much about that. So, you've got respect for the elder, but you didn't have kind of responsibility of cleaning any other things, to be honest with you.
Just a question based on Grasshopper Zurich at the moment. We see the likes of FC Basel in the Champions League every season, and you've got young boys and other sides as well. Yeah. But we haven't seen Grasshopper Zurich in the Champions League for a very long time. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's a good point. I think the last time, most likely, is more or less around my area. In the mid-90s, when we qualified for the first time for the Champions League. And pretty much thereafter, they went all the way down in terms of, I think, massively bad management came involved for a long, long, long time. But also financially, they were struggling for a long time as well. So they're like season in, season out. Every time they really struggled to just past the season with financial issues, you know, few changes in terms of ownership happens. It was quite, you know, for a club who actually in terms of Switzerland, one of the best clubs in terms of winning the leagues, most winning leagues in terms of that, had more than 10 years, actually more than 20 years nearly, not a great record at the moment. Basel obviously take over with that, but Grasshopper, I think, had, well, as I say, financial issues for a long, long time. But, and I think now they might over with that, because a Chinese owner just bought. grasshoppers.
Wow, I did not know that. Wow, yeah. Learn something new every day. Wonderful.
Well, they're the ones who are linked to the Wolves, Wolverhampton as well. They're the similar. Kind of similar owner.
I'm not going to say that Jorge Mendes might have something to do with that. I'm just speculating.
That's speculative, but most likely happens.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, let's be real. I mean, if you look at the managers or the people that have been in charge of the club in the past 20 or 30 years, you've got Otmar Hitzfeldt, you've got Leo Beenhakker, incredible manager, Roy Hodgson as well. So it's not a little club. This team is steeped in history, especially in Switzerland.
No, no, as I say, Grasshopper is historically, without a doubt, the most historic club in Switzerland, the best in terms in Europe. If you talk about Switzerland clubs, Grasshopper Club Zurich was always the club in Switzerland. You know, don't forget, we even go into the semi-finals for the Champions League, you know, by no less than the Real Madrid, you know. In the 80s, there were some fantastic players going through Grasshopper Club Zurich, you know. Ramon, like one of the players, Ramon de Ponte, who played for Nottingham Forest as well, you know, and other players, you know. So Grasshopper was always, and that's the sad thing about it, you know. When myself left the club thereafter, I'm not saying because I left, but it's because just really a few years later, I think the club really went down massively for lots. I don't know for whatever reason, but it was definitely has to do with the financial situation the club was in, and the owners, you know, just wanted to invest into. Used to be, but also massively the management was badly managed the club. And that's the reason why Grasshopper really got to a level now where it is now. Now, potentially with the new owners, with some money there involved, might come back to the glory as it used to be, you know?
Fingers crossed. Okay, so you earned the move to Cagliari, lovely club in Sardinia, Zola land, as I like to call it. And you played alongside a fantastic central defender, Lorenzo Minotti, which... Blimey, plays in Serie A in the 90s were phenomenal. But I keep telling my friends who are a little bit younger than me to watch footage of Serie A in the 90s because that league was just
that was the ultimate to play. If you play in the Serie A in those days in the 90s, and I was lucky to be a defender in the Serie A. We're talking every weekend you play against the best strikers in the planet. That's not one weekend you do not play against the best strikers. It does not exist. Serie A, every single team. Doesn't even have to be AC Milan or Juventus. Even the smaller teams have the best strikers. You know, we're talking one weekend play against Batistuta, the next weekend that was Savicevic, Boba, next one is Ronaldo from the Brazilian, then Signore, Beppe Signore, Robbie Baggio, you name it. Bialli in those days as well. We're talking every weekend we're playing against the best players in the world in terms of strikers.
Incredible. So you mentioned two of my favourite ever strikers in Batistuta and Ronaldo. There's a third one that you played alongside at Spurs, which I'm not going to mention just yet, but playing against those two players, obviously there's a massive golfing class in the strikers that we have nowadays to in the 90s, which I will always say that the strikers in the 90s were phenomenal in comparison to the ones that we have these days. And I'm not knocking the ones we got these days, but it's just fact. But when you're playing against someone like Ronaldo, who, okay, he had those injuries at Inter, he had a problem with his knees, but he was still a world-class talent. And Batistuta, incredible. What can you tell me about these players?
Oh, obviously, the two different characteristics in terms of players. Obviously, Batistuta, absolutely fantastic finisher. You know, you couldn't leave him in the 18-yard box. Every shot or run there, it's pretty much the target, you know. It's a super intelligent way of movements and everything, you know. It was super difficult to play against Gabriel, you know, but it's still there at that time, you know. But Ronaldo is a different planet. He was on a different planet, absolutely different planet. He's quick, fast, very fast with the ball. I'm telling you now, as a defender, not just only nightmare, I was like sometimes even calling the taxi, to be honest with you, because he was just, for me, without a doubt, best striker in the world, you know. Do you know what I mean?
So when you're lining up against him, what are you thinking? Obviously, you're thinking about booking your taxi. But when you're up against him for the first time...
Paid by Ronaldo, by the way.
Sorry?
Paid by Ronaldo, the taxi. So, yeah, no. If you play against him, it was, you know, you see all the video clips and everything prior to that, games and everything. So it's like kind of, yeah, you just make sure you don't turn. It doesn't turn, because the minute he faces you, you're done, frankly saying. Because the speed, the acceleration within the foot, with the ball, it was unbelievable.
Fantastic. And as for Batigol, you mentioned his movement, but again, when I watch clips of his goals, I see this striker that just knows that penalty area. He knows every single millimetre of it. His awareness is phenomenal, or was phenomenal.
Yeah, no. Well, his awareness was like beyond everything. He could make out of the scene what you couldn't even imagine. He would get even in the target. He will do it. That's him. That makes a difference compared to any other strikers. You know, even today, I don't think you can see many that level, to be honest with you, or has that kind of capacity where out of nothing really gets to the target.
Mm-hmm. And are there any honourable mentions in terms of attacking midfielders or anyone else that you came up against? You thought, whoa, this player is out of this world.
In those days, there was Savicevic, Boban, actually Savicevic more at the time. It was also extremely good player in the front there. And Pepe Signori and Roby Baggio, these two, they were just small talent, very, very skillful. And I played obviously the Serie A with them, but also the national team against Italy. Both of them, they're good, just fantastic players, to be honest with you.
And one of the top goal scorers that season was Tovaglieri, who was at Cagliari, obviously. Yeah. He was a quality striker as well.
Yeah, well, we had some good strikers. We had Oliveira, Calivieri as well. One of the players with Cagliari was there, Francescoli. I don't know if you know him, but Francescoli was skills. It was just off the clock. He's never seen a player with so much skill in my life, to be honest with you.
Yeah, phenomenal footballer he was. Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, the 90s had some fantastic players. Uh-huh. There's no doubt.
Absolutely.
No doubt.
Absolutely. Okay, so you hear of this interest from Spurs. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have to go to England.
Really?
No. I was just off. First of all, I played the Euro 96 in England, so I fell in love a little bit to England already after the Euro 96, playing against England. And seeing the supporters, the fans of England and everything, that was just unbelievable, you know. And I thought, wow, this is fantastic. But the Serie A, it was still the best league in the world to play with. So I decided first to go there. But when Spurs was still knocking at the door, and all other clubs as well, like Liverpool and Leeds as well, then I said, well, I think this is a potential opportunity to go to England now. And then I decided Spurs pretty much the ones who decided to take me, and I went there, you know.
Was it Jerry Francis that was in charge at the time? Was it Jerry Francis?
Again?
Was it Jerry Francis?
Jerry Francis.
So what did you know about him? Because I hear about footballers joining clubs because they know the history of the heritage and all that, but also because of the manager. Obviously, the likes of Juninho, Ravanelli, I'm pretty sure if had Brian Robson not been there, they may not have joined Middlesbrough. I know, obviously, money talks, but...
Definitely. Don't forget, England, at the time, obviously, the Premier League started us in 94, 95, around there, was all relatively very new, the whole league, you know, in terms of new perception. The Euro 96 made, again, England attractive to play with. Don't forget, prior to that, England was suspended for nearly 6 years or more.
Yeah.
Or the reason of, I think, one of the Champions League games, Juventus.
It was Heysel.
Yeah, exactly. One of the terrible scenarios that happened there. And then England was pretty much banned for about 6 years from international games. So England was pretty much suddenly non-existing on football map, you know, on international things. So, all the players who grew up prior to that 6 years, yes, I knew about England and the history of Spurs, obviously, of course, and Liverpool and so on, you know. But Middlesbrough as such, not as much. You have to be a local to know about the history of Middlesbrough, you know. Of course, as you were saying, if Ben Robson wasn't there, I think Romanellis and all these guys wouldn't come back, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So what was it about Spurs then? Was it because they're based in London? Because, again, sorry to say this, and sorry to, I don't know, enhance the stereotype, but we have heard stories, again, it's just speculation, that certain players would like to play in certain cities. So, for example, Alexis Sanchez apparently rejected Liverpool to go to Arsenal because he preferred London. Was that the case with you?
Not really particular, to be honest. You're saying that England in the 96-97 was not the same with this today, you know? I think, for me, London in from 96-97 to 2000, about 3-4, was one of the best time. I think England went through this world. I would think it's a lot of innovation came in place. Don't forget, England was really a lot of things behind, you know. For us, you know, coming from the continent, we thought, you know, there were a lot of things was behind. They catched up a lot of things as well. Everything was starting to get more new. Cities like Manchester, Newcastle, Liverpool started also to get more new stuff. We're getting more like, you know, European cities, you know. Well, in those days, it wasn't like that, you know. So for the foreigner, potentially, London was more the most, let's call it, most modern, more international to other cities, you know, to adapt into it, you know. If you look at today, I think every single city in England is more international than before.
Okay, well, this is a very interesting point you've made, because I'm going to take a little sidestep here, because I'm sure you've heard the stories about Newcastle potentially being taken over by the Saudi investment group. Now, if this were to happen, you mentioned Newcastle being a city that's very attractive to people. Do you think that club will be able to bring in big names because, as you said, because of the heritage of the city?
Well, I think at the day the question is not anymore in terms of if they want to go to Newcastle in terms of the city or so anymore. I think that Newcastle has obviously definitely improved over the last 20 years, you know, there's no doubt, you know. So more than, there's a lot of modern things going into the city, you know, it's rejuvenated. I think the council, I think, done quite a lot of things, not only housing, etc., etc. You know, the club has increased in capacity at the stadium. You know, I think now today the Premier League, any club as such, is it's up for any international player, to be honest. It's not, it used to be like 20 years ago, you know. So yeah, and yeah, Newcastle is a big club, you know. They've got fantastic supporters, there's no doubt, you know. People know about the Premier League today more than 20 years ago, because obviously today, you know, it's more televised, the Premier League, than 20 years ago.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, how important do you think it is for a footballer to join a club that is, that's region is being regenerated? And the reason why I ask is because I used to live a stone's throw away from White Hart Lane, and I know that area. And since they've rebuilt the stadium, they're modernising everything. That, in fact, that if you go all the way right the way down to Hackney, everything is being gentrified, as they like to call it. And Newcastle, I've been there a fair few times, so I presume that if and when this deal gets signed off and the Saudis do decide to pump money into the local community and all that, do you think a footballer that is looking to enhance their career going to Newcastle, a place, as I said, being regenerated, would be a massive selling point?
For the player, I think from the player point of view, it's more important the sporting side of it, to be honest with you. If you're talking of an international player, you know, maybe a local boy, of course, he would be very proud to be a player in Newcastle and be part of the growth of the club, you know. So for an international player, but if you're what he wants to get, he wants to club, he's ambitious, he wants to win or something, he has a target, you know. I think that's what an international player wants to do first of all, you know. He wants to a club, he will see he can improve himself, he can give a lot to the club, where he can potentially either win medals with them or from there go to the next level, you know. So each club has his duty as well, you know. Everybody is a top five, because each club has its duty. Either you're like, as you're trampling, you go there for a few years, and if you do well, then you can go to the bigger level, you know. And that's what depends on each player's career and phase. That's where he looks into it, you know. And I think Newcastle, you know, I think if the right management and team and potentially finances must have coming into it, they can go back where he used to be. I think in the 90s, I think they were very good in my time when I played.
Well, if the rumours are true and Pochettino goes in, give him a wad of cash and I'm pretty sure he'll turn him into a bit of a force. But let's not talk about Newcastle right now. I don't want to talk about him. It depresses me. Let's go back to Euro 96, which you mentioned earlier. You fell in love with England as a result of this tournament. I remember that game, Switzerland-England, when Kubilai gave Switzerland the lead and then Shearer scored. Shearer was getting pelters before the tournament. People were doubting him, or the press, should I say, were doubting him and saying this player isn't going to end up anything, and they end up joining Newcastle for a world record fee, but that's by the by. It wasn't a great campaign for Switzerland. There's a defeat against the Netherlands and also Scotland. Scotland never win in major tournaments. What happened? But, you know, yeah. To be fair, that Switzerland squad was very, very talented. I mean, when you look across...
Yeah, well, we had a fantastic talent squad, actually, going into the tournament, you know. And I think we had a great opportunity in the first game to beat England.
Yeah.
At the time. Yes, everybody was saying England was not playing well, but I think you need to look at it the other way. I think Switzerland was playing well, and that's the reason why they potentially not played well as well. At the same time, you know, we had a great opportunity to even win on that day, because if we win on that day, I think the whole tournament will change for Switzerland as well. Now, being beaten by Scotland or even Holland, don't forget, both teams were extremely good, talented players on that as well. You know, Dutch, not naming them, from Kluivert, the Bears, Seedorf, you name it.
Well, not like that team had won the European Cup with Milan, with Ajax,
yes,
against Milan.
Most of them, I think there was a year off where Alex Amsterdam won the Champions League, you know? Mm. You know, so, we took the best players in Euros we play against, you know, at the time, you know? So, you know, be beaten by them, you know, you all expect us as a small Swiss country to be doing it, but we still played quite well, but we were unlucky as well. And Scotland was also an unlucky game against them, trying to lose, you know. But the main crucial game where we really could actually potentially win it was against England, the host.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, look, there are two players, and I've got their names written down with exclamation marks right next to us. I don't forget to ask you about these two. Sforza and Chapuisat. These two players I adored in the 90s. What can you tell me about them?
Well, I played with both. One, obviously, played with Grasshoppers, Zurich, Sforza, since I arrived to Grasshoppers, Zurich. Sforza was a tremendous, great midfield player, centre midfield player. A great eye on the game. He was a good... he moved the game quite well. He had the transition between the defence and the strikers extremely well controlled. He was in those days very good. I think he's done very well. He went, I think, to Germany and Inter Milan as well afterwards. Yeah. I think in Germany he done fantastic well at Kaiserslautern, winning the Bundesliga with it, you know. He was fantastic. We won together a lot of trophies at Grasshoppers. We won, you know, I mean, leagues as well together, and the cups together, and also now the national team playing together. Ben Chapuisat, without a doubt, it was the top strikers in, obviously, in those days in Europe as well, you know. For us, was our top striker in Switzerland, and very talented, great left footed, and he, you know, he had a fantastic career with Borussia Dortmund, you know, even winning, I think, the Champions League at the time with my ex-manager, Altmaier Hitzfeld at the time, you know, from Grasshoppers, you know. So, yeah, kind of everybody was linked together and everybody done quite well, to be honest, you know, in their own way, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And just going back to Chapuisat quickly, a lot of fans will know about Lewandowski at Dortmund. They'll know about other footballers, you know, but they won't remember the likes of Matthias Sammer. They won't remember the likes of Chapuisat, Lars Rick, and all these other phenomenal players in the mid-90s. And as I said, I wanted to mention Chapuisat because, again, he was a very, very underrated striker in England. A lot of people knew about him, but they didn't really know too much about him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, very much. I was so surprised because in Germany, he was like the striker, let's call it, you know. He was like the striker, and I was quite surprised in England completely somehow, you know, underrated these player, you know. And I think he was very comfortable playing at the Bundesliga, because that's where he was being adored by the German, let's call it, most big managers, you know. And it's a shame, but you used to say, like, some and all these guys from Borussia Dortmund in the 90s, that Borussia Dortmund had some fantastic teams, you know. And some great players, I would say, in the 90s. Some fantastic players were going through the 90s. Very good players. High quality in most of the leagues, were very high-end players playing, to be honest with you.
That's right. And it wasn't just pretty football you were playing. You were trying to dictate the tempo. You were really getting into games and getting at teams, which I really enjoyed watching. But
you know, it was a completely different. It was different. The soul of football was, in my opinion, a little bit more in those days than now. Obviously, today we're talking only about the money. Never talk about really the football. Yeah. To be honest with you, we're talking about how much he's earning and how much transfers are and everything else. Yes, you talked in the '90s about it. There were transfers that were existing. But you were talking about on the talent, and particularly many talents were coming out in those days. Lots of good talents.
That's right. Okay, let's go quickly to Spurs. I know you did a podcast a couple of months ago with Last Word on Spurs, so I'm pretty sure you've said a lot about Spurs on that pod. But what I'd like to know from you is that we had Dean Austin on a few weeks ago, and we were talking about that season that you guys were all together, and I said that was a fantastic group of players. You had your Sol Campbells, Jurgen Klinsmanns, Les Ferdinands, etc., Ginola. And he was like, yes, we were fantastic individuals, but we weren't cohesive, we weren't a team. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. It's true, to be honest, you on paper, I don't think so. We were a weak team. Actually, had some quality players.
Not at all.
The performance are different, and actually, what was on the team sheet. You know, we're talking top players like David Ginola, Jurgen Klinsmann, Les Ferdinand the front, Saul Campbell the back. You got Darren Anderton in the middle. You got David Howes and so on. You know, we really, really, really had some top players at Spurs at the time. Yes, we won the League Cup once. That's okay. Well, I won in 99. But I think if we were more like a team and not like individuals, I think we could reach potentially better. But there you go, that's football for you. You can talk all the way along. But football, it's today, not tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, one more thing on Spurs, and this might catch you out of the blue, so to speak. You mentioned David Howes earlier. Now, he was at Spurs for a very long time. I remember him in the early 90s, and that was around about the time when they had the likes of Paul Gascoigne and Steve Sedgwick and all that. And there was a player called Paul Stewart that played at Spurs, and I spoke to him a while back, and he wrote an autobiography, and he was telling this story about Paul Gascoigne. Paul Gascoigne went missing. They couldn't get hold of him because they didn't have mobile phones that day, that era, shall I say. And a couple of hours later, Gazza comes back into training with a guy that's dressed up in a safari outfit, and they've got a big bag. Now, there's a player at the time called Steve Sedgley, and he had a really long neck. They all called him the ostrich. And Gascoigne gets this bag and dumps it in the middle of the playing field, and what comes out of the bag? An ostrich in a Steve Sedgley shirt. Now, did David Howes have other stories similar to that about when, perhaps in the earlier days, when Terry Venables and all these other players were there? Or was the banter still there when you were at Spurs?
Oh, wow. No, not that extreme. Gina Nostrich came to our dressing room, to be honest with you. I think Gazza, bless him, we know him as a character, you know, in terms of he likes his, you know, jokes and banter as such in a dressing room. I think every player will play with him or be with him as such. It's always fun to be with. There's definitely not a dull moment with the Gascoigne, to be honest here. To be honest, it was a new era, kind of, in a way, when we arrived. You know, I think foreign players was a rarity at the time coming to the Premier League. You know, we were kind of like the first ones to arrive, you know, the Klinsmanns, you know, et cetera, you know. So for English players, it was also very strange after such a long time to have foreign or into the squad and adapt to their culture and the way that we were used to deal on the continent, you know. And so, and for us, it's also very very strange to adapt the whole English humour, because as you can imagine, English humour doesn't go far in Italy or Spain. They will be getting angry potentially, you know. They might even slap you because you've been very rude to them, you know. But that's only when if you leave and you have all the nuances of the English language you start to learn, you get to know about the English language, you know. But if you don't know about that as a foreigner, you will get actually angry because you think, this guy is really, really rude to me, you know? Yeah. And can you imagine an Italian or a Spanish player who has character or passion, he will potentially start to smash his face just because he will try to take a joke out of him. You know, they do not like this stuff, you know? But that thing happens, and I think most of the foreign players most likely will tell you that as well, you know? But, you know, you learn very quick, very fast, you know? English players are taking the mickey out of you, and you were just like, well, is that the way of dealing with everything? But that's the way, you know, you're handling it.
Excellent. And sorry about this. One more thing about Spurs. Jürgen Klinsmann, how good was he?
I think he was good in terms of good finisher, to be honest with you. I would say he was the most highly technical person in terms of that, but he was surprising, extreme good finisher and a good runner. I think he was physically extremely good fit, and I think that helped him quite a lot to be in certain position as a centre forward as well. And he just had, a very good finisher. I think he was a classic finishing striker, to be honest with you, you know. And in our time, it was great we had him because he sometimes scored very decisive goals that Spurs really, in some of the moments, we needed to have him, you know.
Mm. Brilliant. Okay, one more segment here. Celtic, you spent a bit of time there. Won the treble, I believe. Was that under Martin O'Neill?
That's it, under Martin O'Neill.
There you go. And I read somewhere that you wanted to stay there for the rest of your career. Is that true?
That was the truth. That was the truth. Exactly, that's what the truth. Listen, you come to Spurs nearly 4 years to start, won the League Cup at Spurs, okay? But then you came to Scotland, you got Celtic. Most of the guys, oh, Scotland, and etc. And warning me, what do you mean? Scotland. So, okay. I'm more and more behind the guy in this level. I went to Celtic because I saw the club, it was big to start with. And then having a great season straight away with them and winning the treble, it was just, off the clock as a player. The dream come true, you know, great start. Great debut straight away, scoring a few goals against Aberdeen and the Glass and the rest, you know. What else you can actually wish for, you know? You had a great start, great start to the season, you've started to play well, and the supporters were absolutely fantastic. And I felt like back home in a way, you know. I feel very comfortable there, and that's the reason what makes me stay there for life, because first of all, the supporter completely accepted me very quick, and I wanted to stay for them because I felt that's the club I wanted to stay, finish my career.
So tell me something. I don't want to bore you with the same question you've probably been asked a million times. What's better, atmosphere-wise, the North London derby or the Glasgow derby? What I want to know from you, mate, is when it comes to the rivalry, the intensity between these two clubs, Rangers and Celtic, I'm pretty sure you knew about the religious side of things, but did you know about the full history? Were you briefed prior to joining the club?
Well, yeah, very much. You have to. You need to know how that works, you know. You can't be very surprised as a player when you go to these clubs, you know. Whatever you choose, that's the club you're going to choose. Mm. You can't really swap that suddenly, you know. You can't also go from Celtic suddenly jumping into the Rangers. impossible to leave in Glasgow, to be honest. You would not stay too long, you know. I was lucky enough, I chose the right club, and that was Celtic, you know, at that time, you know, and Celtic was the one that, you know, I fall in love and I wanted to stay. And then, in fact, saying, I also give them the treble winning, and then that's something I appreciate even today. Every time I talk about it, you know, it's a nice experience, you know. But derbies at all firms, there's no doubt it's one of the biggest in the world. That's something, yeah. It's, as a player to experience, it's a dream come true. From all the derbies you can see around the world, we took obviously the North London ones I played, but also the ones you can see, and I saw as well in Italy when I played the Serie A, you know, the Inter Milan, AC Milan, or the Lazio Rome. These are the two major ones as well, you know. There was a big atmosphere. But when you have Rangers Celtic, that's a different level.
Mm. And the thing is, that squad under Martin O'Neill, it was the perfect squad. I mean, if you look at the experienced heads, you've got the likes of Tommy Boyd, Lennon, Stubbs. You can even mention Chris Sutton being one of them. Who was a Paul Lambert. But then you had the flair players like your Ayo Berkovic. You've got Jules Valgaren, the centre-back. So I think that was a perfect recipe to win domestic treble.
But absolutely, I think Martin O'Neill choose some very good players in the mix there, you know. And the team, when we speak about, you know, the Spurs team, we had quality top players as well. But the team didn't melt together as a team. That's what happened in Celtic.
Yeah.
Some really quality players, but really melted together. And success came straight away. And don't forget, they got the top striker, the front, Henrik Larsson.
Yeah, and 53 Chris goals. And,
the big fella Chris sat in the front was great, because it was great to check him, because he was a tall guy, all the ball, and Henrik Larsson really was still the finisher behind that. And then Alan Thompson, good left foot as well, Lampard, and then you know, some great players we had there, something I think, and that they went on to do fantastic stuff as well in the European Champions League, you know.
Fantastic. Well, look, one more thing on your football career, mate. And I'm going to let you choose this one. You can choose the players, the best 11 you've either played against or played with. Which one do you want to go for if I gave you that option?
I would say against, to be honest.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I would say to start with in goal, Buffon.
Okay.
You know? Banucci. Right back, Roberto Carlos, left back, Maldini.
Blimey.
Maldini, yeah, it pulls, you know. Then Fernando Hierro. Yeah. And then in the middle, I will say Michael Laudrup, Zizou, Zidane.
Wow.
Then Overmars on the left.
Okay.
Yeah. On the right, Josh Kennedy.
Oh, okay, from Ajax.
Yeah, that's a top place as well. And then the strikers, I wish we had the 90s at the top. I would say definitely Ronaldo, Brazilian. And then where was it there? Yeah, I have to just admit that it's stupid as well.
There you go. You put my mind
I have to say that.
Well, that is some team, mate. That is some team. Well, look, one more thing before I let you go, I promise. What are you doing with yourself now? Because obviously we're connected through a specific social media platform.
I'm pretty much more on the sports side. In terms of consulting sports federations and football clubs, okay? This is what I do. This is kind of my things in terms of the financial side point of view. not limited M&A of football franchises, you know, in terms of purchase and acquisition of football clubs as well.
Excellent. I'm not going to ask which clubs, but...
So, yeah, that's kind of, you know, pretty much consult on the governing of Football Federation, the structure, that side, but also on the technical part point of view, but then also on the financial side, trying to help the financial side of the football clubs, you know.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, Ramon, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you very much for your time. Hope we can have you back on again sometime soon.
No worries, mate. Okay.
Hope you be safe. And is there anything you'd like to promote while you're here? Any social media?
No, I'm fine. No, I don't have to promote too much, you know, at the moment. The only thing is to get everybody healthy and we can go on with life again, you know. That's the only thing, to be honest with you, you know.
Absolutely. I agree, mate. Well, look, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And we'll catch up soon.
No worries, mate. Yeah, absolutely. Take care, mate.
Brilliant. Thank you, Ramon. Appreciate it.
Good night.
Right, so that was Ramon Vega, guys. Hope you enjoyed this interview. We're on Twitter at Shoot Defence. We're also on Instagram. Give us a follow. So until next time, take care.